Good morning, everybody. Man, it was cold last night as you guys were in the tents, and reminds me of Greenbelt. Anyway, it's great to be here, and it's great to have been with you at another Greenbelt. This is like my 12th or 13th, I think, and somebody reminded me this morning, yeah, but your talks are always the same. I said, yeah, that's right. It just takes a while to kind of fit in. So I'm kind of slow at talking, and hopefully this stuff will sink in, and I just want to tell you what a gift you are to me. You know, in the United States, my church is like the slowest growing church in America. And we only have 30 people, 35 people. In fact, I came home from Greenbelt one time, and there were 18 people in my church that Sunday morning. And I just spoke to, I don't know how many hundred people that were here or whatever, and I remember walking back in there, and by the end of the church, I realized why I was there, because I need those people. Because they always come up to me and go, you know, I was gone for 3 weeks, and they said, you know, we don't need you here. So that made me feel really good. So I'm glad to come to England. I love England. I love you folks. You're so nice to me, and I love being in your country, and I'm off to Scotland after this. Do some more speaking and sightseeing and all that kind of thing, and thank you for spending your... Well, this has been a heck of a weekend to be with you, and you're, as I said, a great gift to me. This morning, I want to speak about five pagan values that the church has bought into. Five pagan values that not just the church, but those of us who are Christians have sort of gotten sucked into. And when I talk about these things, I mean by those pagan values that they're not just pagan values or pagan, but they're evil. And these evil values have sort of snuck their way into the church and into our lives. And because they've become so much a part of us and sort of snuck their way in, we don't even know they're there. We're not even aware of it. And before you know it, we end up blessing these values in our churches. And these values and these evils have sort of worked their way into our lives so that the Bible and Jesus and God and church and all that gets all mingled and commingled in with this stuff, and it ends up diminishing you and me. And it ends up diminishing the gospel, and it ends up diminishing Jesus. So let's get started. There are five little values that I want to look at, five evils that I think have permeated the church. And the first is one that when we hear it, we'll all go, duh. The first evil that has permeated the church and Christianity and all of us is busyness. The reality is we are all just too busy. Even when we come to an event like this, there's stuff from 6 in the morning till midnight till 2 in the morning, and we're all running around like crazy. And I just talked to someone and I said, well, did you get a lot of sleep? And he said, yeah, after I went to bed at 3, it's good sleep. There's so much here, there's so many things to do, and there's so much out there in our lives. And when you go to church, you discover that the church has decided that's what makes life meaningful, is to have lots and lots of meetings. And so we have meetings every single night of the week. We've got church in the morning, church at night, church on Saturday, church Friday morning. We've got the incredible devoted discipleship class at 6 o'clock on Friday mornings. We try to squeeze in every possible minute we can to keep us all so busy. And a lot of you kids that are going to school right now, let me tell you something. The biggest issue a lot of you are struggling with is not sex, it's not drugs, it's not immorality, it's not that stuff. It's stress. Because everybody's putting so much pressure on you to get good grades. Didn't you just get the results of your exams? I forget what they call them. But and the pressure and the stress that everybody's under to do all this stuff. And it's coming from Christian people. It's coming from the church. It says, if you're a good Christian, then you'll be a good student. I was a terrible student. I flunked my junior year of high school, my senior year of high school. I barely got through. It took me 10 years to get my four-year degree. Woo-hoo! It was awesome. It was worth every minute of those 10 years. I'd get diverted. I was doing youth ministry. I did what I was called to do. And if I had to hang out with kids and get in a water balloon fight or study, I chose the water balloon fight. I know I had a lot of people who used to get mad at me. My wife finally got mad at me and said, you are now going back to school, if not, no sex. Which I suddenly became very dedicated to education. And Listen, that's the way it is. We live in a culture that more and more is becoming busier and busier and busier, and we worship people who are too busy. We actually look up to them. We actually look at a minister who is constantly gone all the time, and we elevate them and go, wow, they're so incredibly busy. They're traveling here, they're traveling there, they're doing this, they're doing that. They must really be important and really necessary. It's about time we recognize that the gospel is not about being busy. The gospel is about being slow. What ought to characterize the church is that when you come to church, we are slow. I didn't say boring. I mean slow. We are people. For example, let me give you an idea. When we're here at Greenbelt, in fact, it's happened to me numerous times, I bumped into people that said, we got to get together. Oh, man, listen, let's get our calendars up. And we never talk to each other until next Greenbelt. And then we say, oh, let's get together. And we never do. The reality is that if we're slow, if we're people who believe in the gospel, then we are people who take time to be with each other. We take time to build friendships. We take time. And too many of us are so swamped and so busy and so wrapped up like this, we can't believe it. In fact, it seems to me that part of Christianity says, we don't have much time left. We better get busy. My kids all ran track, as you can see, and they were all athletes, and just like their dad. And one of the races that I went to track meets over and over again. I don't know why. You don't call them track meets, but you know what I mean. Field events where the kids would run, and my kids were all like in the mile race. And I went to this one. I don't remember what, but there were 13-year-olds running. I don't think you ought to have events for 13-year-olds. They're not quite ready yet. Their bodies are in all different stages. Some of them have hormones and some of them don't. So you have these giants racing with little wimps running behind them, and they're all the same age. And I'm watching this little race, and it's the mile race. Obviously, I just got there late. To this day, I don't know why I was there, because my kids were not racing in that race. But I sat down, and it was obviously the last lap, and I noticed that the people were coming towards the finish line, and the crowd was beginning to cheer, and there was these two guys out in front of everybody, and they were running really fast, and then there was a big bunch of people behind them with empty space, and then about half a lap back was this little short, fat kid. He's not running anymore. He's just walking really fast. And his face is bright red, and you can see the blood vessel in his neck. And this little kid is just running. He's looking down because he's so embarrassed and humiliated that he's so far behind everybody else. And all of a sudden, the crowd goes crazy as the first two people cross the finish line. And then there's a little pause, and everybody else passes. And here's this kid. He's still a quarter of a lap behind. He comes running by our little stands, and this woman who's sitting next to me stands up. Must have been his mother. She pushes me out of the way, goes down to the railing, looks out at the little boy, and goes, Johnny, run faster! Now, if you're Johnny, what are you thinking? You're thinking, I am running as fast as I can. Have you ever been to church? And the pastor gets up and goes, run faster! You ever been to a seminar when the speaker said, run faster? And there's a lot of us in this audience today that are going, I am running as fast as I can. Let me tell you what Jesus says to you. Stop running. Take a nap. Relax. Have you ever felt guilty because somebody told you to start praying? You need to pray more. And so you went, okay, my God, I'm going to pray. I'm going to really pray. And you lay down to pray, and an hour later you wake up, you fell asleep. And you feel guilty because you slept for that hour instead of praying. Excuse me, you needed to sleep. It was God sort of saying to you, lay down, go ahead and sleep. You need the rest. That was your prayer. And for many of us in this place, we are exhausted. We're tired. We're worn out. We're at the edge of burnout. There's a lot of you parents, you look totally exhausted. I know you're camping, but that's not the only reason. We're totally wiped out and exhausted, and if anything ought to characterize the church, it should not be that. And let me tell you what happens when we're busy. Because we're so busy, then we get impatient. And we don't have time for people, and we want them to hurry up, and we want them to get done with what they're going to do. Ever been talking to somebody, they're looking at their watch, and you can tell they're not interested, they're not really listening? Let me tell you, when you walk into church, everybody has time for you. and sat in their booth. There was like seven of us, and we all talking on our phones. After the police left, we had, look, this busyness thing is catching all of us, it's wrapping all of us up, and we're in an event like this, and we hear about Jesus, and he makes us more compassionate, and we worry about the poor, and we worry about the hungry, and we do all that, and all that stuff is true, but let me tell you what Jesus does. First of all, he cherishes our time, and he says to us, slow down, rest, take it easy. I'm just so blown away that Jesus was only here. He only taught for 3 years. Why didn't he just come and speak for years? But he didn't do that. And you and I need to recognize it. Because here's what happens. We have no time for romance. I don't know if the English are romantic or not. I'm Italian. But I have the feeling that deep inside of you, romance lives. And you've been blaming it on I'm English, we don't have romance. But I'm here to tell you, yes, you do. If you took the time, you'd have plenty of it. And there's a lot of you here. You're not having sex. Let's just be frank here. I'm just talking to the married people right now, excuse me. Not because of anything other than you're so busy and so exhausted when you go to bed. There's no time for it. There's no time for romance. And
music playing, kids laughing, stuff going on. Now I'm really mad. I'm so freaking mad. I can't believe it. He's left the phone on the floor and we're hooked up. And I can't get it up and I'm ready to slam the floor on the phone now. And just as I go to do that, I hear crystal clear coming across the phone. I love you, Grandpa. Well, I was good at that. All my anxiety, all my frustration, all that stuff went out the window. The most beautiful words a grandparent could ever hear, I just heard. I wonder how many of us at Greenville here have been running around like, man, we're so anxious, we're this, we're that. We're thinking, well, some of you already are thinking about we've got to leave at noon, and we've got our stuff packed, the hotel ready to go, we're going to get out. And already that stuff is starting to impose on everything that's going on in you. And all God wants you to do is just take a little teeny bit of time so he can whisper to you,
scripture.
parents really got upset because they were Christians and they were very upset and very concerned that he would live with this gal. He lived with her for 3 years and they were furious about it. And one day they both decided they were going to get married, so they called up the parents because they lived back in the Midwest, he lived in California, and they said, hey, we're going to get married and we wanted if we could come home and have the wedding in your backyard. And mom and dad said, yeah. But you can tell, because mom and dad communicate pretty well, they weren't all that happy, but they'd rather have married than not married. So they planned for the wedding. The next day, she takes a pregnancy test. She finds out she's pregnant. She says, forget it. We're not going to the wedding. We're not coming. We need the money for the baby. We're just going to stay home and get married by a civil official. So they go downtown, San Francisco, the middle of town, City Hall, to get married. And they ask my son and his girlfriend, now his wife, to go down there. They go with them. As they leave the wedding, my son's girlfriend looks at him and says, that was the worst wedding I've ever seen. She said, we need to give them the wedding they never had. And for the next 3 months, they planned this wedding. Her parents live in the Napa Valley. So they went out there and planted all these plants that by March, they would be blooming in the backyard. They then started inviting everybody they could think of. They got 60 people who said yes. About a month before the wedding, said, we're planning a wedding for your son that they never had. Would you like to come? They said, yeah, we'll not only come, we'll pay for all the relatives to come. So they had about 30 more. The day of the wedding showed up, they told the two kids they were just going to have a lunch with my wife and I. We didn't even know about this thing. And so they said, dress up. So they dressed up at noon. They show up at her parents' house. Two vans pull up. They jump out of one van, a bunch of guys. They grab the guy, throw him in the van, drive off. The girls are you smothered and shut up and kept quiet. The gospel is for people who are willing to say, listen, Jesus came into my life. He was the disruptor, the complicator, the disorganizer, the confuser, the threatener, the agitator, the confronter, the interrupter. That's who Jesus was. When we celebrate the little baby Jesus at Christmas, we understand he's going to ruin our lives. That nice little baby's going to wreck everything. Well, you know that. You got babies. In 3 weeks, I'll be back to work. I'll get that baby sleeping all through the night. No problem. Jesus was unpredictable, wild, dangerous. And let me tell you, he was full of life, and full of salvation, and full of joy. But he was also dangerous. And we need to recapture that dangerous Jesus. I think the Christian life ought to be like a roller coaster. You have roller coasters in England, don't you? Yeah, you have television and all that stuff. And you know what? I love roller coasters. I mean, I love those things where you just kind of go out and you fall like 300 feet. Just love those things. And I love going to the, and these new ones are totally freaky. They're not like the old wooden ones. You know, the old wooden ones, when I was a kid, you'd get them. I mean, it was unbelievable. You had a little metal bar, and it went click. And if you were fat, you lived. If you were skinny, it was all over. If you fell out, well, that's the way it goes. Not anymore. I mean, there's all this insurance stuff, and so, man, I'm going to get technology out of here. So when you get in that thing, a big thing comes over your head, it hooks under your arm, pits them. Then another computerized thing comes up, and boom. You go, I'm going to die. I haven't even left yet. And you start up that thing, and it's about 200 feet high. As you're going up, you start getting kind of cocky. You know, yeah, all right, this is not that high. What's the big deal? And then they have a little flat thing right at the top that kind of fakes you out because you think you're over the hill. And so you get up there and go, what is the goal? And for the next 40 seconds, it's like, thump, thump, you're done. Now that, to me, is the Christian life. Forget this mountaintop valley junk. Oh, we're on the mountaintop. Now we're in the valley. Now we're in the mountaintop again. Now we're in the evil valley. Now we're in the mountaintop again. The angel stands in the valley. That's not the gospel. I want to be the roller coaster. You say yes to Jesus. Okay. I'm going to die. That's right. You start from Sunday school church. Jesus cheers. Me, Jay, me. Woo, yeah. Oh, Jesus. Oh, yeah. Oh, man. I'm falling down. This is really good. Ah! Next 20 years, you're dead. You know what, folks? If I was to die right now, have a heart attack, I hope I had just enough wind left in my lungs as I fell to the ground and look at every one of you and go, what a ride. God, what a ride this has been. That ought to be the gospel. We're not just little nice people that run around. Hi, I'm a nice guy. No, we're people who have gotten something that has so taken a hold of us that every minute we're living in. Somebody put it this way. Robert Benson said, 2 minutes die with half the music left in us. Oh, my God. And if you're in an urban area, if you're in poverty, then you die with so much of the music left in you. And the gospel is about singing and playing all that music out. And you and I need to recognize that that's what that's about. The fourth evil. The fourth evil is power. And power comes in many, many different shapes and forms. The biggest thing that it comes in is arrogance. We are just so, Christianity sometimes, I just get so embarrassed. Become a Christian and you'll eliminate cancer. Become a Christian and you can always be healed. Become a Christian and your marriage will always work out. And become a Christian and you won't have zits. And become a Christian and you'll be perfect. And become a Christian and you'll be happy all the time. Become a Christian and this and that. Become a Christian. That's not what this is about. Jesus did not come to do any of that. He did not come to make us powerful and successful. He came to make us to recognize that we're broken and not fixed. And he came to say, I'm going to be with you in your unfixedness. And too much of the gospel is about fixing us all. Instead of us just coming to Jesus in our unfixedness and letting that be what communicates to other people. Mike, you're a broken guy. You're a messed up guy, I know. But Jesus, I can somehow see that, catch the fragrance of Jesus in your life, even in your brokenness. Exactly. Exactly. That's what